Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the NXT review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hampler and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I say, they're joined by Hampler and Sidgwick to review NXT and an eventful show, Michael Hampler.
Yeah, I really like this. I thought this was a great wrestling show. NXT, one of the things, even when I think it's half decent, rarely feels like it flies by like this episode did. Mm. I was really impressed with the sequencing of everything, which has been actually a victory for NXT in the last few weeks. They've paced out the spaced out the big matches really well, and they've given all of them the requisite amount of time for you to like invest exactly as much as they have in the stories that have led up to them. Just it felt tight. There was a couple of finishes I didn't really like, but this was a really tight and broadly very enjoyable show.
I thought the in-ring action ranged from good to very, very, very good, and it was consistent throughout the night. I just, in terms of the storytelling and how they advanced certain character arcs and built matches, I kind of liked the style with which they did it, the intent, but not the execution. There's one thing I'm going to bury, but otherwise, yeah, this is one of the stronger NXT shows I've seen for a while, and I just remember emerging from it thinking, hey, I bloody enjoyed that.
Yeah, a few distractions, a few bits of interference. We'll get into that. I thought for the most part, as you said, Sidge, that the in-ring action was really, really good. And there was one genuinely laugh-out-loud moment that we will get to in due course. But let's start at the beginning of the show. The grudge match that was Toni Storm versus Zoe Stark, personified by the fact Storm slapped the taste out of Stark's mouth just as the bell rings. Tough looking bump for Stark on the apron by Storm, tripping her up there and then pulls her off it and then hip attacks her into the ring steps. Later on, Stark blocks a great counter. Stark blocks a Storm Zero, hits a Hurricane Rana. Then Storm eventually comes back. It's a German suplex, hits the Storm Zero for a great near fall. And you think, well, how on earth is she going to follow it up with this mad new finisher she's got? I don't know what it is. I've read people describe it as a step over twisting DDT, so that's what I'm going to go with. But regardless, it was bonkers. Toni Storm got the win. And then as she's celebrating post-match, the light go out and you hear, I don't know why I really like this as a way to just piss all over the parade and Frankie Monet to literally steal the spotlight. Her going, oh, we expected someone else. It's me, Frankie. And then she pops on the stage with a bloody dog. I don't know why I like that so much. But yeah, Hampler, what do you reckon to the opener?
Loved it, man. I loved it. That slap foreshadowed like the rest of the match in terms of how hard everything just hit. They just laid it in. And I got so much out of that. Like, you mentioned the apron bump, but, like, you like was so desensitized to, like, steel steps spots for the most part. And I felt that. Like, I heard myself going, oof, like that. And, like, it just laid in a pattern for the whole match. And it was, again, quite appropriate that we got that finish of all finishes. It wasn't just, oh, the Storm Zero isn't going to cut it anymore. I need this new devastating kill shot of a finisher. It was completely in keeping with the fact that these beat the absolute out of each other.
Yeah.
Like another really impressive performance from Zoe Stark. Like as good as she is now, it kind of makes you think they've got something very special in her when she properly finds herself as a character. I don't know if they go that route of heel turn first, followed by organic babyface turn, or she gets to like ride this out as a babyface. But when the bare bones are so brilliant, like, I don't know, like the sky's the limit for somebody like Zoe Stark. And again, like, to go back to that finish, as dangerous and as violent and believable a finish as it looked, I wonder if it reflects like a turning point for Toni Storm. Her heel turn has basically happened with no sort of, no narrative attachment to it. She's just gone bad. She's just beating up the baby faces instead of beating up the heels. And she's lost a couple of matches as a result. Is this finish a representative of her finding her focus again? Like, this is part of the heel turn. This is part of the new Toni Storm. The old stuff wasn't working, as we saw with the Storm Zero. So she's going to this well instead. So I thought, like, psychologically, it was really sound, as well as, like, fabulously vicious looking as a way to put, like, not just as a way to put Zoe Stark away, but as a way to put her over as somebody that was approaching her equal. I thought this was brilliant. Frankie Monet stuff was, like, really cute as well. Like, we're considering this, and they had, like, that billboard advert later on. I think they've done, like, a bang-up job of, like, building proper hype for her. She's going to be, like, you know, like, I think about this a little bit in podcast terms, and I think about it in, like, you compiling your preview notes. She's near the top of the list next week, and there's an NXT title match. I think they've been, like, super effective in building up her debut, and it didn't take away from, like the shocking impact I was left with from this match.
This was great. Not like 4 stars or above, but for an actual TV opener, very, very good action. Like, just the connection on some of the stuff. Like, they engineered the tone of a fight, which is really what you want, particularly out of NXT, which can, ironically, given these accusations are normally lobbed at the competition, it can degenerate into my turn, your turn spots. We saw it literally last week in a match that didn't really need that kind of style imposed upon it. This was a scrap. This is a scrap decorated with some really cool looking stuff. The flight on Stark's dropkick is tremendous. She was like a missile at certain points. That steel step spot resonated with me as well. It felt like she had a head like caved in, jammed between Storm's propulsive force and the actual metal. Like, really strong stuff. And I'm going to pay this match the highest possible compliment and what it reminded me of. Without being anywhere near as good or effective, because I hold this finish in the absolute highest regard in terms of all-time great pro wrestling finishes. John Moxley's debut, right, against Juice Robinson in New Japan Pro Wrestling, one of my goddamn favorite finishes. In that moment, I knew, all right, John Moxley's going to be great, because he still had the WWE stink. He'd done the awesome podcast interview, which got him over, but he's still just, like, how good is he in this new context? And he just did one of the cleverest things I've ever seen a pro wrestler do within 20 minutes. Thought, right, okay, he's awesome. And I fell in love instantly. What he did was he put Juice Robinson away, or tried to put him away, with the old version of the Dirty Deeds DDT. He registered it enough to a Japanese audience that might not have been totally familiar. He was clever enough to register it as, right, this is the finish. And then he kicked out. And he's like, right, okay, Ron's going to have to be John Moxley, not Dean Ambrose. And then he did the spiked Death Rider version. What he did was he put Juice Robinson over by having him kick out of his finish in his first match. Then he debuted a brand new deadly looking version of it to put himself over as John Moxley and not Dean Ambrose. It was fabulous. You can't debut a new finisher every week, but this is the perfect context in which to debut a new finisher against someone who you had to be clever about to put away. In terms of putting someone over and defeat, NXT's nailed this with Zoe Stark. They nailed it again tonight. I thought this was genuinely fabulous. Without going to the 4-star level, genuinely fabulous booking.
Yeah, great comparison that there as well. We followed that up with Cameron Grimes arriving in his fancy car. Jake Atlas and a few other wrestlers are outside. Have a bit of a back and forth. He says, oh, you can't park there because that's where Ted DiBiase parks his limo. Grimes isn't happy. Square up to each other. And they challenge, the challenge is laid down for a match later on tonight, which gets made official. And Grimes throws money at Jake Atlas because, of course, he does. And then we cut to the spa where Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell are getting facials, they're getting massages, they're celebrating the fact they are NXT Women's Tag Team Champions. And they're talking about Dex Lumis being just such a bloody loser. They're slagging him off. They're saying, I don't know what I ever saw in him. Indy Hartwell says she's absolutely done with him. The camera zooms out. It's a little bit creepy. Dex Lewis is the one giving her the massage, and he looks very forlorn, and he leaves, and it cuts back to Stu Bennett, who says, "I will never shut my eyes during a massage again." What did you make of this, Sig?
I can't decide whether it was bad optics or a sight gag. You could do something else, so why not do it? Particularly in NXT.
Yeah. There is. It's an avenue to go down now that I imagine film and television wouldn't, which is somebody laying the hands on somebody without consent. But it was done in that way to be obviously part one of a two-part gag. Mm-hmm. And obviously the reveal of Dex Lewis is like, I'm exactly the same as Sidgwick on this one. Like, that stuck out instantly. But I really liked the payoff gag. Mm. I wonder maybe, could they have got there without the specific use of a massage, of all things? Because Indy Hartwell's like, she's got like all the agency in this relationship with Dexter Lumis, which I think, you know, has been important to sort of not like allow you to get away with stuff like that, but like she's the one kind of like in control of this relationship. And obviously, it's, if anything, it's Candice LeRae trying to put these barriers up from Indy Hartwell getting to Dexter Lumis. It's nothing to do with Dexter himself. I really like the payoff. I still really like the angle. And I think this was a nice way to like use the angle on this show that was otherwise quite wrestling heavy. I thought this was nice breather sports entertainment content that you don't always get between the matches and between the grit of NXT. So I liked it. I too felt a little bit weird about the choice of a massage and Dexter. Like, how long was he in the room? How long was he touching her without her realizing? It's all that sort of stuff, all those questions that, like, it's okay to ask. But the payoff was good. Like, genuinely, I thought the payoff was quite funny and quite sweet. And the way it continued to, like, elevate the material they're given.
Yeah.
She probably would have consented is absolutely not the same thing as consent.
No.
Exactly. We'll get to the lighter side of all this in due course. Instead, next we got the prime target for Balor versus Cross 2. They showed footage from what happened before. They edited in, you know, bits of their promos and the back and forth that they've had, and they had talking heads from the greatest wrestler of all time, Pat McAfee, Jimmy Smith, Paul Heyman, giving their points of view on who they thought was going to win. Surprise, surprise, Michael Hamflett. I mean, Prime Target's always excellent, isn't it?
Yeah, this looked great, but I don't think it was terribly effective. I kind of, what we talked about in the preview yesterday, all the gorgeous like camera cuts and the shots of them hitting each other really hard, like all of that landed more than, say, like a long, deliberately paced and scripted NXT in-ring promo. Like, far superior than that. But the whole idea was, obviously, so you've got like, well, there's Pat McAfee and Paul Heyman as these, obviously the cameras just happened to be at SmackDown, so they got the shot in when they could. Like, Paul Heyman doing his spoiler bit, and the whole idea was supposed to be, I can't call it. Like, I can. Like, it happened 2 weeks ago to TakeOver and Karrion Kross won. Like, that was very ineffective because, like, it doesn't, like, if they're 1-1, that's when you do the, I can't call it anymore. Like, these two are just complete equals. Couldn't believe Balor got the measure of him in the rematch. And now, like, I wouldn't put the house on it. You just don't know what's going to happen. Like, you do. The idea here was to, like, try and find a way to build suspense that Finn Balor can get it done the second time around. So I thought this looked stunning. WWE at the best of this, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure it was effective in making me buy that Finn Balor's got a chance next week.
The Road 2 Dynamite are the best at this, just to clarify that point you've just made. I'll just put words in your mouth if you don't mind. I thought this was actively bad. What's ironic, right, about Paul Heyman is that he's been telling you the truth for years now as it pertains to Brock Lesnar winning the matches that Paul Heyman says he's just going to win. That's not a prediction, it's a spoiler. In that regard, yes, he has credibility and he's been really clever to do that, particularly when it didn't happen. And yet, he's such a carny. This is a guy who will tell AJ Styles, "You're literally the best wrestler I've ever seen." And you can imagine 2 minutes later, I'm saying the exact same thing to somebody else. Not that AJ Styles isn't actually phenomenal, but you get what I'm saying. Paul Heyman is such a lying, carny bastard in a, you know, sometimes very effective way. I can't take him seriously. I just can't. And I know all the stories about him promising that checks wouldn't bounce and they bounced. He's just a snake oil salesman. And it works when he's doing that in character. But when he's positioned as this impartial guy and he's saying, just too close to call, I do not believe a word he's saying because it's Paul Heyman saying it. So I didn't like that. I did like the idea that these are athletes who watch tape and who study and who prepare and who strategize.
Mm.
That's good, but I didn't like the execution of a real good kernel of an idea. Some of the actual verbiage in this, I thought was absolutely woeful. We fretted on the preview about what story was there. Instead, they reached for this gravitas that just simply wasn't, and it just felt fake as a result. Pat McAfee said, and I'm thinking I'm not just paraphrasing, I'm quoting here, it will be a dream come true if Finn Balor wins that title back. Will it? Whose dream? Obviously Finn Balor's dream. Are you saying, Pat McAfee, that it's your dream or the fans' dream? And you can't say, oh, it's a relevant obligation because they will get a rating to do the rematch. You can't say that, but at the same time, you can't also say absolutely ridiculously lofty things because then you come so close to parody. And Jimmy Smith said it would be a tragedy if Finn Balor doesn't get it back. What? Dreams, tragedies, shut up. I honestly thought this was actively bad.
So on that as well, what they're basically suggesting is that when Karrion Kross wins, and we're led to assume he's probably going to fight Johnny Gargano, the babyface has caused tragedies and the ending of dreams. The babyface. Like that ties back to the problems they've got with the Kross character.
And they picked, without any thought as to how this is going to all play out in the big overarching narrative, they picked the just what incredibly lofty words can we use to sell this fight that sounded ridiculous and will reveal themselves to be even dafter in the next month, as you've just accurately pointed out.
Yes, as always, very hyperbolic, but I enjoyed it. But I can absolutely see where you're coming from with that. We got Jake Atlas versus Ikemi Grande to the moon next. He came out. He's cutting a promo on his arch nemesis or his arch rival, Ted DiBiase. He shows a video of all the biggest bits of Ted DiBiase look like a knobhead, basically. Big losses, embarrassing moments, etc. Grimes is loving this. And then the CWC crowd, or just someone presses a button, the DiBiase chants start coming through and he already throws another conniption fit. He's furious. So Atlas and Grimes get into it back and forth. During the match, we see a white limo arriving at the building, of course, with a dollar sign on it. Atlas gets a great near fall from a massive lariat on Grimes. And then suddenly Grimes counters him, hits a running Spanish fly, and looks like he's setting up for the finish. When suddenly the Million Dollar Man's music hits, Ted DiBiase walks out. Grimes is looking at him. Jake Atlas rolls him up. Jake Atlas even makes roll-ups look good. How are they messing him up so much? He rolls up and he just looks like he's completely stacked him. There's no escape. He gets the victory and DiBiase does his signature laugh as Grimes just flips out again in the ring. He runs out. He chases him out to his limo. He tries to get in, tries to open the door, does open it, but he has to pretend he can't. Lets the door shut again. Whoever's driving that limo is getting fired. There's a child lock button, surely. You guys will know something about this. So he tries to get in the limo, and the window comes down, and DiBiase says, "He did good, kid. You're just no million-dollar man." He chuckles to himself. The limo drives off, and Grimes' head explodes yet again. And we're getting, what was it, a million-dollar face-off or something next week, which I cannot wait for, Sige.
I half liked the hint from what DiBiase said to him through the window that there's a idea that he's going to mentor him, and in fact he's possibly been mentoring him all along. Beyond that, I'm getting badly to get to the point territory. It's no longer that funny. They've done funnier stuff with this, and yeah, we're going to get to the point, so yeah, that's one thing. But like, the longer this drags on without any real connection to pro wrestling or how this dynamic could genuinely alter the trajectory of Cameron Grimes' career beyond he's a little tit. A funny one, but a little tit who just has conniption fits. Right, okay, it's cute. The more they don't do anything substantial with it, the more I'm thinking, it's no wonder this lot have just completely had their asses handed to them in a war. They are using DiBiase as a sight gag for the amusement of the boomers who the advertisers don't care about. Like, it's not cutting edge, relevant, particularly buzzworthy stuff. It's cute for what it is and a show needs it, but just get to the point.
It was a bit of a filler this week, wasn't it, Hamflet?
Yeah, a little bit. There was a lot of clips of Henry Godwin slopping Ted DiBiase, and I'm thinking, look, you've already given me in your house. Can you give something to the young fans instead? Like, I'm getting what I need out of this product. This was a bit of filler week. Same, to echo Sidgwick's point, I got the same vibes about a possible relationship between the two of them, maybe, rather than it ending in an actual feud or DiBiase having an opponent. Like, that dialogue wasn't by accident, and I did appreciate that, because it did... Instantly, I just felt like, oh, Christ, thanks, some direction. Like, I needed some direction to this. I'm going to say the phrase, good little match, without it meaning to be as patronising as it sounds, because it was good and little. Cameron Grimes, like, he wrestles. When I watch him wrestle, I feel like I'm watching Daniel Bryan enter for that Brock Lesnar match at Survivor Series when he kind of came down the ring like a spider. Like... There's something so creepy crawly about Cameron Grimes' style that I find so like absorbing. We've mentioned this before. He wrestles like Cameron Grimes is supposed to wrestle. And that's such a problem in NXT, because we know they're all coming through this multi-million dollar gym. And we know that they're all going to Shawn Michaels finishing schools and they're all going to the same promo class and stuff. So when personality actually seeps out of the wrestlers themselves, like, they're performers. They should be elevated versions of the characters they perform as when they're wrestling. Cameron Grimes is one of the very best at that. Jake Atlas is pretty good too, but obviously he's given far less in the matches to be able to show that off. But I just thought this was a really lovely 5-minute exhibition of all of that before, like, a pretty disappointing finish. The finish was rubbish, and that, I think, was the big problem here, because it kind of put me in a bit of a bad mood for whatever was to come with DiBiase. Like, the DiBiase content was all right, but I thought, like, the music distraction laugh finish was, like, really lame. And I was I was less willing to forgive the door opening bit, because I was like, oh, you've just done the laziest possible idea for using Ted DiBiase live. Oh, now the door's come open. This is a botch, isn't it? You screwed all this up. And then they won me back around a bit by the end, but I don't feel like there was such a need to put a bad taste in my mouth in the first place.
Yeah, these finishes don't work at all. They are absolutely dead passe, every single bad word you can throw at them, and they particularly don't work when it's... So you have heel versus babyface, the heel comes out to distract, the heel rolls them up. You essentially, in theory, this never happens, get heat on two heels. Jake Atlas just looks like a punk for rolling them up and taking that win. Even if he's like, it's the clever thing to do, don't book it to look like that. Sad thing, I go, what else do you expect him to do? It's like, well, you're looking at this situation as what's the best thing for the situation. I'm looking at the situation as don't do the situation.
Yeah.
Scroll through the WWE.com photos for any TV show, Raw, SmackDown, or NXT. Every week, without fail, you will find one image, at least, of a babyface celebrating, sat on the floor or sat on the ramp. That's such a massive problem, and they shouldn't need telling as to why that is, but that is such a... Every single week, there will be a babyface celebrating on the floor. What that means is they've just rolled out. They've just stole one. They're just escaping with the victory, you know. The highway rats that every single one of them are. I don't want to see that visual anymore.
Well, you're going to see it on Friday.
A little video package promoting the steel cage match for the main event. Bronson Reed talking about the fact it's literally, I think, 14 years to the day since he started wrestling, and he promises to win and win for his family, his wife. He wants to celebrate with her at the end of the night. And then we go to Python's sit-down interview. He's asked who he wants to face next. He talks about beating Kushida. He said he's got unfinished business with Walter and Finn Balor, and he wants Karrion Kross, the NXT champ. He wants everyone, basically. He's asked whether he gets enough respect. He says, no, I've never had a bad match. He talks about the style that he wrestles in and the influences from England and Japan and the US. Talks about his goals. He's asked about what he wants to do. He says he doesn't set goals, but it's time he goes after the NXT title. He's conquered the UK, and now it's time to take over here. What did you think, Hamflet?
Bad execution of a good idea, this. The sit-down sports interview, Pete Dunne away from the bravado he's not very good at in the ring, should have really helped. he could have been like mean and nasty and shown a bit of disdain for the interview without it being like too campy and pro wrestling and over the top, but he could have just shown that he's not a nice man to get over this character that he's trying to portray and this idea that he's going to win titles and he's done everything and all that. Like, we pick on the content of all this every week. Pete Dunne's character's a mess. This didn't help. This didn't fix that. But they went so far in that that I think he ended up coming across as neither heel nor babyface, and he just became another part of this NXT characterization problem. Talking about like how different it's, how awesome it's going to be when the fans are back, because what a difference they make, and wanting to win titles because he's already won over here and won over there. Like, he didn't come across as this nasty, embittered heel. Like, he was bordering on babyface at times. So I think the idea was really good, and something Pete Dunne could have really benefited from. I think the scripting and perhaps his performance of it, like, really let him down. This didn't work, I don't think.
What was this? What was this? It didn't establish a match. It didn't establish a trajectory. He just said some wishy-washy stuff about, oh, he'll do anything. He literally, he needs to stop saying he doesn't care. He needs to stop saying, he says, I don't care almost every single week. So why should I? Why should I? I don't care conveys the fact that he's an aimless, directionless character. They've clearly got some sort of direction for him, but they're nowhere near articulating what that is. And at some points, I thought, humble, nice guy. He looks a little bit uncomfortable, and he clearly knows that he's better in the ring than he is at this. I almost felt sympathetic to the guy who'll snap your fingers off. Like, what was he talking about his connection with the fans for? Unbelievable. And again, when the guy asked him, well, no, when he asked the guy, look what happened to Johnny Gargano. And the guy looked like, don't ask me. I can't remember the result of that match. No, I couldn't either. He's like, I won. It's like, all right, okay, thanks for reminding us. What was this? What on earth? Is he a heel? Is he a babyface? Am I meant to like him? Does he like fans? Is he just a mean bastard because that's how he usually acts in the ring? What's he going to do next? Why should I care? This is just a soupy waste of time. And it's one of those things where he simply is not a particularly good promo. I never thought I'd say this, but I think he's better scripted. This felt like an attempt, right? Let's get some more of your personality, Pete Dunne. I kind of half liked him at points. Just came across as like a hard-working guy who possibly hasn't found himself yet. Didn't go into pit. I just didn't. I don't know what to think, so I'm just going to stop talking.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Right, let's move next on to Alexander Wolfe versus Killian Dane. That match was meant to happen, of course, last week. There was issues with the doc and speculation about who made sure the match didn't happen last week. Was it the medic? Was it Alexander Wolfe telling him to tell him that he couldn't wrestle? Whatever it may be, the match was rescheduled for tonight. And Dane, obviously just massive powerhouse, dominates from the start. And immediately, Marcel Bartel, who's there on the ringside with Fabian Aichner, Drake Maverick in Killian Dane's corner, of course, he jumps up on the apron. Maverick jumps up to even the odds and gets sent flying. Dane knocks Bartel off the apron. That allows Wolf to get in and hit a German suplex. Marcel Bartel slides a chair into the ring and orders Wolf to hit Dane with it. in all the hesitation and the referee getting involved in all this, that allows Dane to hit a running crossbody. 1, 2, 3. Killian Dane wins. Maverick comes in, jumps on his back, celebrates. Post-match, Imperium go to do their pose, but then suddenly Aigner and Bartel turn on Wolf. They attack him, beat him down, leave him laying there. And, well, that's it. He's out. He's been betrayed by his Imperium brethren. And, Sanity maybe reuniting, I suppose, Sige?
That was the worst part of the show by some distance, and I really didn't like that prime target at all. Dane did some quite fun stuff, and he timed it really well too. Otherwise, the match was kind of drab, and it was all pretext to whatever the hell that post-match was. Alexander Wolfe is an idiot. Everyone else except him could have spotted that betrayal coming 5 miles away. And why on earth, when you just got beat, would you celebrate a loss just to stage that angle? If he was a half-decent babyface, he would not have, even someone on the verge of turning into one, he would not have celebrated a loss. He would not have been stupid enough to realize that the celebration was just like orchestrated so that they could stand behind him and attack him from behind. I thought there's no emotional heft to any of this whatsoever. Sanity were a... I love them in the first War Games. I really like that first match. I don't know if I've told you before. But beyond that, they were like, ugh, crap this from almost prime NXT. So there's no heft to any of this whatsoever. Characters involved look like idiots. Imperium are involved. Sorry. Like, I'd go to the... You know, I've said this a million times about Imperium. I would be entertained massively by them going really physically at a live show. I don't want to see them on telly. This is one of the reasons why I don't want to see them on telly. I don't think I could possibly care about Alexander Wolf, God bless his soul, as a TV character. And I was given less reason to potentially care about him down the line. All of this was bad NXT being bad.
Well, I don't want to talk about Sanity. Sanity were crap. I hate Sanity. I really like this. I was really surprised at how much Sidgwick disliked it just there, because I really quite enjoyed this. In stark and, for me, quite pleasing contrast to Cameron Grimes, I like that this got to the point. Alexander Wolf didn't want the match with Killian Dane last week, obviously. Didn't want to fight him. He's gone a bit soft. Walter's spotted it and has obviously told them, like, if he does this again, he's out. You know, that feels like the story that's been told. The pose was stupid. The pose to set it up was stupid. Completely agree. They should have thought of another way to have them turn on him and make it look particularly cruel. That's what they were going for, weren't they? It was like, how can we make this look the cruelest? Like, what's going to be most effective? Oh, look, we're all still a gang. We're not a gang anymore. Stabbed him in the back. Should have come up with something better for that, because that felt a bit cheap. But the match was too short to get boring. Mm. The choice of spot worked for me. The idea that they absolutely, again, acting presumably under Walter's orders, they just don't care. Like, batter this guy, batter the little guy. Come on, show who you are. Like, even we all know that this, the canvas, blah, 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 is all nonsense. We're bad guys. We're bad guys. And he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to beat up his friend. A story that I think they've told. I don't have to have been interested in much of it, but they have explored the relationship between Killian Dane and Alexander Wolfe. And, you know, like, it's been over the course of, this is where I'm with Sidgwick, over some pretty boring Imperium tag matches. So, you know, I appreciate that, like, some of all this is kind of dry. I thought this was by far the most entertaining, like, part of this story so far. Like, I didn't see the turn coming, so maybe that's on me. Like, I didn't see this being the week that they would flip. But, like, he's out now. I am absolutely not calling for a return of Sanity. Not at all. I just enjoyed this as a little, like, segment of television.
Speaking of bits you enjoyed, my favourite bit of the show that wasn't in-ring came next. That was a brief interview, it'll come, with Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. She congratulated on defending the NXT Women's Championship, and then she's asked Raquel Gonzalez about the confrontation between Gonzalez and Kai in the trainer's room. And Raquel says, look, we've all got Twitter. We all saw what happened. Look, I respect Mercedes Martinez. I wanted to show that. Dakota Kai, meanwhile, wanted her to kick her head off. And then they went on they were about to talk more about how they want to regain those tag team titles. They want those belts back. When the greatest thing this week about NXT shows up, and that is Ever Rise. They walk in. They've got little mugs that they drink out of. And I don't, everything that they say makes me smile. And bits in this, like I say, made me genuinely laugh out loud. Why you got to be greedy? You're already a champion. You, not so much.
a pair of Enzos.
They go, so they, Kai and Gonzalez are like, sorry, who are you? Who are we? Kind of like the best tag team ever and the host of the smash hit Ever Rise Live. How do you like that? How do you like that? Why is that so funny? How do you like that? And then they're going, Raquel Gonzalez, friend of the show. And she goes, I've literally never seen it. And the thing that really made me laugh, I don't know why, she goes, I've never seen it. And one of them goes, excuse me? Like that got me. Excuse me? And then the other one goes, sounds like you got a problem, huh? You want to take a swing at me? And the other one goes, don't worry. There's no way she's going to. Obviously, immediately, Gonzalez just twats him. He goes down, spills his coffee everywhere. Kai and Gonzalez laugh and walk off. It's just so basic stuff. But these boys are poppers every time for me, Hamflet.
Yeah. Ever Eyes Live is such a brilliant bit. Such an inspired bit, right? Because, like, obviously right now, they're just like Troy and Abed in the morning off Community, where it's just a talk show in their own mind. But it's wrestling. Somehow this will make its way to being NXT's like talk show segment. But for a change, it's organic. Like, they've had to work up from bringing their own piece of cardboard to put in front of the logo and getting their own mugs made. That at some point, Ever Rise will host a talk show. How great is that, by the way? Like, I can't wait till the weeks where we're talking about, I don't know, Johnny Gargano is a guest on Ever Rise Live. And it's just this thing that we accept now that they're like talk show. Brilliant. Like,
that gives them James Drake.
Yeah, it's never been about who they are in the ring. That will obviously come. We'll one day see an Ever Rise match where we're like, wow, these can actually go or something. But like, it's way more about the personality, and they found the vehicle in which to use this personality. So we're going to get there at some point, and watching them on that journey is just tremendous. So really funny. Like, I can't top the pops that you've already dropped with this stuff that Ever Rise have like delivering week on week on week now. There's consistency there, and the way they're being used is not an accident. It's not just stuff that we're having to dig out on Twitter or YouTube. So that's great. And I want to like heap praise on the Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez stuff again. This is like the third time that they've talked in an interview about knowing that people want them to split. This is the way you book pro wrestling in 2021. Wrestlers can't be, what do you mean the attack was by accident? I haven't watched last week's show. You can't do that stuff anymore because there are clips of last week's show kicking around on Twitter every single day. Twitter, which wrestlers are on all the time, tweeting in real life and in character. They have to acknowledge that people are buzzing about them eventually splitting and then banter that bit off completely. Their split is going to come because the two of them in their own heads are splitting. They're going to fight in the ring and it's going to be a step too far, or they're going to have a clash at the gym again. And it's going to be like, well, I know what people are saying. I'm not going to buy into any of that, but I'm a bit pissed off that you did that. Like, it's got to feel real between them, and they're not going to let what they know is happening in the background like inform any of that. And I just, that again, that's like the third time that details come up, and I really appreciate that. It gives me a lot of faith that they've thought that split all the way through, and that split's going to be awesome. Like, it's going to be something we get to anticipate now for the pretty much the duration of like Gonzalez's title reign until it happens. So that hit for me. Ever Rise are piss funny. Great. All great.
Sorry, I'm not. I wasn't bored.
I threw you on a yawn there, and then I realised that's going to sound like a raw bit.
No, it's not a raw bit. I tell you what, you know what isn't a raw bit, right? I really need a piss right now. I'm not going to go for one. I really want to talk about that tag match. Great. Yeah, this is funny and also effective. It's really good when characters interact in a shared universe because you can get a team over on the level that they need to be over. And you can use them as a punching bag for something like this. Just good, entertaining WWE stuff.
You want to take a swing at me? There's no way she's going to. I think she was pulling back as he was saying there's no going to.
My mom says, what do you think of that? You never promise, great. That's how, like, what do you think of that?
She doesn't say their other catchphrase. Right, let's move on to Thatcher and Ciampa versus La Garda del Fantasma. There was a bit where they both, Thatcher and Ciampa, both got a Wilder and Mendoza in ankle locks. They reverse it to go for falls. And referee goes, I don't know what you're doing. You can't do two pinfalls. I don't know what's going on here. Mendoza got busted open. I think he got hit by an elbow. They sort of recapped it after a break, saying that he'd been checked over. He was cleared by the medical team to carry on. Lots of great diving in to save and break up pinfalls, mainly by Thatcher. Ciampa and Thatcher ran wild in parts as well. Wild does a flip dive to the outside. Ciampa hits a widow's bell, covers Mendoza, but right at the last second, in comes Wild to break up the pin at like 2.9 or whatever it may be. And then all of a sudden, grizzled young veterans come down, attack Tommaso Ciampa on the outside, rolling back in the ring. Legado del Fantasma hit their double team finisher on them. And Mendoza pins Ciampa. Sid, you said you enjoyed this.
Yeah, I loved this. I thought it was the best match of the night. With respect to the main event, which I thought did its job very, very well indeed, this is just something else. Like the kicks that Thatcher took to the goddamn chest, the defiance that he fought through them, like the timing of everything was so on point. Not only did it nail that tone of, oh, these guys are kicking the shit out of each other. That's great. This is a fight, but it's a fight in a way that, unlike some of Thatcher's early NXT stuff, putting them in the tag team is the best idea they've ever had, by the way. Like a fight with a sense of urgency, and it had that entertainment value and it had that adrenaline rush factor going into it. The timing of everything was splendid. That I didn't see it coming, that 2.9 save from the Will's Bell. I thought that was awesome. I will be lenient on the finish because it is simply just what NXT does, and the tag team division picture is so much of a marked improvement on what drab drivel they were doing last year, that at least like it feels like a priority again. I thought this match and some of the work in it was absolutely first rate. So good that it just didn't really, I wasn't really bothered by the finish. Yes, it's great.
Yeah, how good is this, man? Like, these were wrestling as if NXT had rankings. That's how good this was. Rankings are really helpful. A framework of wins and losses mattering. It doesn't have to be literal rankings. It's really, shockingly, helpful to the quality of matches. And that's what was going on here. Legado del Fantasma, we've known through the story that they were next for MSK, but they were wrestling like they had something to prove to get that shot, as if beforehand this match was presented as... It wasn't, but it was as if this match was a number one contenders match, and they were like... empowered by the idea that like the one last thing they had to do was prove themselves against two really, really hard lads to get that shot, just to kind of like recover again, like it almost doesn't feel worth revisiting anymore, recover the battering they took against Karrion Kross. Like the Legado del Fantasma rehab since then has been outstanding, like as has the rehab on this division at large. It's a work in progress. You can tell that they've still got their key matches and the key combinations. I wouldn't say yet like by any means this is fixed, but it just feels like everything's going on the right track. Week after week, we have a really good tag match to talk about, and that's like the standard for the women's division. So if they can get there for the tag division, they're properly onto something again. I just never thought I'd see the day that Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa would both make such good like hot tag merchants.
Yeah,
they're both great at being Ricky or Robert. Like I don't know how this has happened, because look at the pair of them, man. Like, They should be the grizzled old vets to the grizzled young vets. Mm. And yet they're this like, they've got this like babyface superpower energy when they want to turn it on. I love it. I think the chemistry is amazing. Yeah. As Cedric pointed out, they're like Thatcher getting in this division was inspired, but it's not like Ciampa was going places either. So like this whole team's inspired. They can lose and it doesn't feel like they're buried 6 feet deep now. Like we know that Ciampa and Thatcher are at a level where they can get a couple of wins together and bounce back. So, like, that's ideal because they've put an over Legado del Fantasma. This is like a big win for Fantasma, like, before they get the title shot, and it felt that way too. Just class, really, really good. Grizzled Young Vets versus Grizzled Old Bastards is a match I want to see. So, sold me on that too. Great. all great.
And yeah, later on in the show, Regal announced that Legado del Fantasma will challenge MSK for the tag titles in 2 weeks. Women's tag titles on the line next week. We'll get to that promo in due course. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, next week we're also getting the $1 million face-off and Frankie Monet's debut alongside that NXT World title match. We got a backstage interview with Bobby Fish. He said he didn't make the save last week to help cool Kyle O'Reilly, but to get his hands on Pete Dunne and Oney Lorcan for the injury that they gave him at he then challenges Dunne to a match next week to settle what they had going on. And we cut back to the spa where Lorraine Hartwell are just saying how great they are, how great they feel. They're just feeling fantastic, not just as tag champs, but just generally. And then a woman comes in and announces that Candice LeRae's card has been declined. And like, oh, bloody hell, what's Austin Theory been spending on it now? I don't know how this woman knew this, but she went, oh, no, it was a florist. I don't know how you find that sort of information out. But anyway, LeRae's like, oh, I can't think what that could be. Obviously, it's all the stuff with the flowers and Shotzi and et cetera, et cetera. But Indi Hartwell isn't angry. She just realises that NXT's surreal love story can continue, and she skips out of the room announcing, he still loves me. Sige, your thoughts?
It's the kind of segment that you don't really care about the fact that none of it makes sense, but none of it made sense.
Yeah.
How has she been able to use a credit card yesterday, for example, for a purchase that was made however many weeks ago? How little money are the stars of NXT making? If you're going to get...
Maybe that was the Wave's exclusive credit card. She's like, I'm not putting that on my expenses. I can charge this to the work account.
The law of the way, is it, Wilborn? Come on. Come on, mate. Jesus Christ, you're better than that. You're much better than that. Look, it was a load of bollocks to arrive at a plot point, but it's not the kind of story where I really care about the detail. So I will have it.
I thought this was good, in spite of how nonsensical it was. I like the energy of, like, that rom-com energy of, like, now they've both overcome this obstacle, Hartwell and Dexter Lumis can find each other again. Like, it's silly stuff, but that's exactly what it's designed to be. We're going to skip ahead a little bit if it's all right. I have a significant concern about the potential divide in between Hartwell and LeRae when they have that rematch, which, by the way, I hate, with Shotzi and Ember Moon next week. I have a real concern over that. I don't need that match, any of it.
It's not, right? It's Gonzalez and thingy, isn't it? Dakota Kai?
I thought it was Shotzi and Ember Moon, wasn't it?
It was Ember and Shotzi will challenge Candice and Indi in next.
Yeah, because Ember eyes were like, no, Shotzi and Ember are the number one contenders.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
So the idea was Kai Gonzalez would be waiting for the winners. So I was like, well, I hate that booking straight away. And then I hate even more the idea that, like, the way it might now be compromised and Moon and Shotzi win the belts back and we're just back where, like, I'm sure it won't, like, I'm not sure it won't happen. I'm saying I'm sure it won't happen. The way they've only just won the belts. Maybe it will. Maybe they see the Dexter Lumis stuff as the reason to get the belts back off them. I hope not. I wish this match wasn't happening. Shotzi Blackheart and Candice LeRae, guys, eh? What are they going to do to each other?
Grab a hold. God damn it.
I've got real worries that they're going to switch the belts again next week. I was bang up for this rain.
Quick word on Sige as well. On the promo later from Blackheart and Moon talking about rebuilding and rebuilding their tank and them thinking they've sort of nailed this great catchphrase. That's what she said. There's the big finish.
The dorks, they are complete and utter dorks and they are making me like Shotzi Blackheart less and less and less every single goddamn week.
How do you... That's what she said.
Yeah.
How... Like, everybody's seen the GIF, but they've not seen The Office. Is that the crack?
So this is pattern NXT, realistically. So.
Jesus Christ. This was, like... we've all been much kinder to Shotzi since the early days. Like, but much like Tanks, when it came to this promo, I didn't give it. So...
I just thought when she said that's what she said, I was like, she didn't just say that, did she? It's like a... Okay. Prior to that, we had a promo from Gargano ahead of his title match with Bronson Reed. And also, we got a brief match with Saray versus Aaliyah. I'm 100% on Team Sige with this. I guarantee you probably reacted the same way because I've just fallen in love with Saray over the few weeks that we've seen her. Right at the beginning, Saray just as the customary, let's have a handshake before it. And Aaliyah cheap shots her. And I went, kill her, Saray. No one does that to you. And she did. Leigh got some offense in, but Saray hit that mad missile drop kick she does when she's sort of in the rope, her opponent's in the ropes. Saito suplex, 1, 2, 3. I love her, Sidge. She's great.
I do too. There's already the sense that they don't know how to tell stories for people who can't speak English as their first language or fluently or whatever. Repetitive stuff for me, this, and I've got nothing further to add, realistically. Stuff always looks good. It's one of those things where you could always care more. CM Punk used to tell people, right, when he was in that company, like, it could always be better. Like, this company could always be better. And that's a feeling that I share with him completely. Like, this could be better. They could tell a story for her. But it's still vibrant and exciting. I haven't been desensitized to how excellent she is yet. So maybe they sense that. People will sense that too.
They will be currently working out, if they've not already worked out already, what heel it is that interrupts or steps to Saray. My gut feeling is that it might end up being Toni Storm. But like the match that's going to be her first big moment, possibly even like a takeover sort of thing. You remember it was like Dana Brooke and Emma for Asuka?
Yeah.
Like they're bringing like somebody with like international pedigree and a heel is too cocky for their own good, you know, as if they've not been watching what she can actually do and then they're taking out and stuff. I want to give like a little bit of credit to Aaliyah here because like she's been in the Performance Center / NXT system too long. It is not developmental if you're not developing. And I've like, it's a long time that she's not been developing. It's very satisfying watching her take a beating. She's really good at something and it's rare that she's going to get much credit for that because obviously it's always on the other end of taking a beating, but that's a skill. And I just want to give her a bit of credit for that. I can think of several times when Aaliyah's taken a very convincing and satisfying light kicking. So in that regard, she's like perfect as a member of the Robert Stone brand as well.
Robert Stone wearing obviously that from 5 years ago.
It just that gimmick has got such a low ceiling. So like I think they all kind of make the best of it.
That was when we got the That's What She Said promo. And then we got Hit Row, Ashanti, the Adonis, and Top Dollar from Hit Row.
I need a piss.
Tony Nese and Aria Daivari.
I'll talk about it, just I do actually need a piss.
Nese and Daivari just got battered here, flew all over the place. Did make them look really good, to be fair. Top Dollar picked them both up for a mad sort of fall away slam. Adonis hit a drop kick and they were just kicking had them in the corner, almost to the point where Top Dollar had to sort of stop Ashanti's before they got disqualified. And the finish was sort of an FU into a brain buster, I suppose is the best way of describing it. Top Dollar covers Daivari for a pinfall. Post-match, some fresh rhymes being dropped by Hit Row. But Swerve basically says he wants to face whoever wins the NXT North American Championship later on. Amphlett, what did you think?
Well, I think it's funny that Cedric's like gone to the toilet during this match because the row is what we call the row of cubicles in the new office toilet block. And to be honest, because they're still relatively new, I think I'd probably enjoy looking at them for 2 minutes 20 rather than a Hit Row match. This was too functional to be fun. It was too boring to like really establish Hit Row as like a danger, as a threat, which is supposed to be the point. You know, Swerve's assembled his own army now. And the idea is that obviously, like you can't, stables are great. You can't have more than one the way. So you've got to find a different way to book a stable. They've got to be dangerous perhaps, or they've got to be a proper threat. I don't think that was particularly well established here. Despite the fact that it was over Daivari and Nese, who we know, and they're kind of stars is a big word, but you know they're known wrestlers, long-standing guys. So like this should have felt way more impactful than it actually did. So I feel as a match this failed, and I'm still just getting like parent-teacher association-sponsored support group vibe out of them. Like when they slid into the corner. So that friggin' we could get the, later on, Johnny Gargano's in the cage match. Like, they've already fed them the exposition. So, like, that's no good. I didn't believe any of it for the second week in a row. And the match was like nowhere near effective enough at establishing them as an actual danger to the rest of NXT. I can't imagine. So, like, let's go to AEW because the comparison is always easier. If John Moxley and Eddie Kingston have just been attacked by the Elite and they're pissed off and they're walking backstage, you can sort of visualize them walking down the hallway and like people ducking out of their way or seeing them coming a bit, oh, just go back in there 5 minutes. I don't want any of their like anger. I don't need that energy right now. I'll wait to live. I've heard the car wheels screeching and they've left for the night. I don't imagine that at all. Hit Row go backstage and there's like Ever-Eyes pissing about with the new mugs or whatever. Like somebody's doing some weights in the corner. They don't feel like a danger to this roster. And if Swerve's not put them together for that, why are they this act?
All I know is that for the second week in a row, I didn't believe a goddamn word they were saying. I was cringing. It feels consistent with the idea that nothing can ever resonate as real in this company, whichever brand, red, yellow, blue, whatever. In a similar vein to cool Kyle O'Reilly, it feels like a totally futile attempt to coax out a real personality and extend it and turn it up to 11, as they say, and it just can't work in the system because it is just too overproduced and micromanaged and lame and corporate and soulless. Oh, God, I just hate this act already. Like, I really do. I hate them. I hate Kyle O'Reilly. In these micromanaged roles is the caveat there.
And that's what he said. Did I get it right? I get that one right. Is that how that joke works?
I mean, I said it.
Main event time. Johnny Gargano, Bronson Reed in a steel cage for the NXT North American Championship. And as soon as the match starts, they followed Cedric's booking. Gargano immediately rushing to try and get out of the cage door. Reed stops him, batters him, chucks him around. Eventually, Gargano fights back, springboard moonsault off the top rope on Reed. Later on, Reed catches Gargano when he's going for another springboard, hits him with a Death Valley driver. After the commercials, Reed makes a comeback, hits an avalanche Samoan drop off the ropes with Gargano. Gargano answers back with a powerbomb off the top rope. Theory's just an annoying gnat at ringside. He's always trying to help Gargano escape. He's trying to pull him out of the ring at one point. At that point, Reed pulls Gargano by the feet back in. Theory goes to do the old slam the cage door on the babyface's head, but Reed turns the tables, slams the cage door in Theory's face. Counters one final beat. Reed does crawling for the door this time. Theory is successful in slamming the cage door in his face. Gargano hits one final beat, but Reed kicks out. Gargano attempts to climb over Reed out of the cage. But Gargano instead gets hit with a super power bomb. Theory again tries to interfere by climbing the cage. Reed just knocks him off it. Reed closes the cage door, gets Gargano. Tsunami, in the words of Stu Bennett. Covers Gargano. 1, 2, 3. Bronson Reed is your new North American champion. And as you alluded to earlier, Sige, you know, not necessarily match of the night, but this did everything it needed to.
Yeah, absolutely. Great presentation without being a great match, though there were elements where I thought, yes, what you've done here is that you have made a special attraction feel special through your sort of embrace of the creativity. Like the sunset flip bomb spot was unbelievable work from Gargano. They told the perfect story of a WWE cage match, as I thought they might yesterday on the preview. Bronson Reed only ever climbed that goddamn thing to get Gargano into it again. Mm-hmm. I thought they measured everything with Austin Theory really well, to the point where I didn't feel like, oh, it's a cage match, so there has to be interference. It just felt like every story beat, every spot, the fact that it was a cage match to settle this particular dispute and how Bronson Reed has not been allowed to have a fair match with the way, I just thought it was exactly what I needed to be. And there's no real, I wasn't 100% thrilled by this dangerous feeling, proper grudge cage match. But as far as a WWE cage match goes with the players involved, I thought it was pitch perfect. That might be feigned praise, but it's praise nonetheless.
Poison Rana on Bronson Reed.
Yeah, I mean, they went big at certain moments. Like, it was just enough of a spectacle to justify a cage match, where so often they've done cage matches just because. This is another indication that there are elements of this product that are actually working again.
That Poison Rana, I thought, was better than every single spot in the third fall of Johnny Gargano versus Adam Cole at TakeOver Toronto. Like, genuinely, like, how it actually meant something. Like, God, it felt impactful. And, like, Gargano remembering himself for a second and being like, I don't just have to run. Like, I'm really under the cosh here, and I don't just have to run. And I know I've got something like this in my locker. Like, I thought that, like, the timing of that spot, like, the execution was great as well. But, like, the timing of that spot was just superb. Very, very good, this. Cedric's right to be critical of WWE cage matches, what that style represents and what damage it's done to the cage as a stipulation overall. I'm a, like, and I have been on the podcast in the past, I'm a pretty big advocate for the NXT ones. I think they've gone, like, and I probably doesn't get enough credit, but I think they've gone quite a long way to establishing the cage match as an actual feud decider, as a blow-off. Again, more cage matches are good than bad in NXT, I think. Austin Theory on the outside had, like, the energy of a 1980s manager with the, like, physical ability of a 2021 wrestler, which was sort of perfect. Like, a Slick or a Bobby Heenan couldn't get, like, trapped and sandwiched between the door like Austin Theory could, but it, like, told the same story. And it puts over Bronson Reed as this babyface, like, that has to do so much more work than he should need to. The whole idea is that trapped in a cage, Johnny Gargano's not lasting 2 minutes with Bronson Reed unless he's got the likes of Austin Theory to help, or unless he's got that one quick dash for the door or whatever it is. And I just thought they told that story well. It's probably Bronson Reed's best ever match in the fact that it was memorable. Like, Bronson Reed has good matches. He's put in some good performances, and there's been the odd memorable spot here or there. But, like, this felt like the making of him. And considering how half in, half out they've been with his booking, like, that's a success in and of itself. So I thought this was very good. And I'll be interested to see now if he can kind of live up to what they expect from their champions. Bronson Reed is now, like, it was no accident that we got wind of, like, Bronson Reed's family being over in Australia and his wife being in attendance and all that sort of stuff. This is absolutely where WWE go with their babyface champions. And it'll be interesting now to see how Bronson Reed copes with this as the next sort of next stage of his evolution as a character, I guess. He's got to be the monster in the match, and then they're going to make him the nice guy. Meet my wife. Like, we've met frigging Kushida's baby. That's how far they go with this baby face sort of stuff. So, but this was definitely the perfect start for him.
I'll tell you what will be interesting as well is if you work out how many title matches they put on TV when they're up against AEW compared to how many they put on now. Because we've got, obviously, had one tonight. We've got two next week. We've got one or two the week after that. But they all feel a lot more natural and organic. Is that fair to say, Hamford?
I mean, I think so, yeah. I've said it a few times before. There was such a robust pattern to how NXT used to book that you could justify a bit of criticism towards it. 2 and 3 week television cycles while you tee up the takeover opponent in the background. But basic wrestling has existed for years like this, effectively so. And that's all ever NXT needed to be before it showed its arse in the war constantly. So yes, while there probably is maybe just as many title matches as there was in wartime, when they feel earned, you don't care.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. Totally fair. Title matches draw ratings. The way to do them is to not make it feel like you are so desperate. And if nothing else, I still think there are fundamental problems with this brand. You see it in Cool Kyle O'Reilly. You see it in Hit Row. It's artificial. Ugh. But the old-fashioned mechanics of pro wrestling booking, this company's brand is getting right again. But where's LA Knight and Shansha?
Yeah, very good point. That's a very valid point. And I suppose the good thing they are doing with these title matches that they didn't do during the war is actually give us a finish. So then we're just like, well, you have to watch next week if you want to see who's
finishing the build, not just a match graphic.
Yeah,
exactly. Iron Man cage ladder match is the only way to solve it, says William Regal.
But there you have it. Bronson Reed is the new North American champion to cap off another great episode of NXT. Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE, and make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. Got the AEW Dynamite preview to come later on today. But for now, this has been the NXT review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.